the great Bobby Belt.
Bobby knows ball. Hey, let's talk ball. We're the ball knowers and we just talk ball.
Oh, no. Oh, so yeah. Let's talk about it in below the belt.
On a 1 to 10 scale. You can use decimal grades. Choppy's grading my pun here.
Oh, no. Oh, so yeah. It's a 6.4.
Okay.
6.9 in my book.
It's a 6 is that's a passing grade. I'm going to take it. Oso Odighizuwa is one of the greatest like people you will ever come across in the NFL.
I've heard.
Super charitable heart. Really decent guy, has amazing backstory in terms of everything that he's overcome and what he's done to get to the point where he's at today. Super hard worker. He checks so many boxes that you would typically want in somebody on your football team. That's why it was a little bit of a bummer for me. I understood where they were at in terms of the scheme and the type of personnel they had. I understood why they felt like they ultimately had to move Oso Odighizuwa. But it was still a bummer for me that he wasn't going to be in the locker room anymore. One of the best guys in that locker room, just as a person and a human being. And you have managed to anger that man. You have managed to have that man literally talking about throwing knives at you. As he was on with Richard Sherman. It was the Richard Sherman podcast. And he was chatting with Oso.
He would be kicking down doors.
Yeah, or not effectively allowing me kicking the door, not actually having enough strength to kick it down. You know, he doesn't have that Brandon Browner strength. He can't actually take the door down.
That's a good reference.
But Richard Sherman and Oso Odighizuwa were talking this week about that upcoming game this season between the 49ers and the Cowboys.
Did you see the schedule?
Yes.
You got any games that you got circled? Any games that you're excited for? And I know, don't give me the cliche answer of, man, they're all important, because they're all important. They all matter. But sometimes some are mean a little more.
I mean, speaking to the rivalry, bro, this is a game that for a long time it's the game that you got a picture on a dartboard and you throwing the knife at the picture. Now I just take down the picture and I put up the other picture and I'm on the other side of it, but the energy is exactly the same.
I like that. I like that. I like that. People don't understand how many, like the San Francisco 49ers and the Dallas Cowboys, that it used to be an old rivalry that was very intense, and it's become that again on both sides. I think there was some legit frustration, some legit anger, and now you're on the other side of that, and it's gonna be fireworks
for sure.
So he's not like really like seeing red or anything. No. He's talking about that, but there were a couple of things that I thought were interesting about
this. It'd be like me saying, "Oh man, I just can't wait to beat that." I'm like the least competitive person you've ever met.
It sounds very just. I think it's just Osa's delivery. Yeah. He's gonna sound very relaxed. But here's the thing: I think there were a couple interesting things there. One, the fact that he talks about that here within the organization. I think we've always assumed this, but it's never believable whenever the coaches or anyone else would try to say, "Oh, you know, just it's another game. We're doing this. We're doing that. Yada yada yada." The last few years, that game has been different for them. There's real genuine, as Richard Sherman was talking about there. There's genuine animosity there between those two teams. Now I feel like we kind of lost a little bit of it with the 2024 game, where Dallas was not really very good by that point.
This is the 42-10 or whatever it was.
No, this was the 30-24 in San Francisco, the one where they were down and then they kind of started making a comeback a little bit. But no, the 42-10 was the one that spurred.
That was the CD.
That was CD on and off by himself on the sideline. Yeah. That was
the McCarthy game.
That was the come to Jesus with everybody after that, and that's when the offense clicked into place.
It's hammer nail, man. This is not a rivalry. Stop saying it's a rivalry. We're not on their level. At least we haven't been.
Their level, but I don't think you necessarily have to be on their level, quote unquote, for there to be. Like, the rivalry is just the hatred.
Yeah, but like from a competitive standpoint.
Like, what's a competitive series in sports you can think of where it's like they play each other a lot and they're competitive, but I don't think of them as hating each other.
They play each other a lot. They're competitive.
Yeah. Like, it's a competitive series, and they play, like, whether it be in the NBA or, like, for instance, you know, I think of the Rangers would play, for instance, various series against, you may play like a bunch of games against the Angels, and they're competitive and they're in the division and you don't like them. And there was a time where when John Lackey was there and Jared Weaver and stuff, yeah. I think there was real intensity there. But even when they were playing competitive series with each other, or there were other teams like that they did, there was a difference with, as infrequently as they played, Toronto. Toronto right. was hatred.
Oh, yeah.
They hated each other. And Texas didn't win either series, and it didn't matter. It was a rivalry. They hated each other. Texas lost both playoff series. And
yeah,
I think with Dallas and San Francisco, there's enough history built there that the tight competitive nature of those two playoff games they played, because they didn't get run off the field in those two playoff games. They were both yeah. one-score games. They got...
Yeah, the score of the first one that was here felt...
It was bigger than that.
Yeah.
The second one...
We had some chances.
The second one felt like a game where if some things change differently here or there in the first
Pollard
few quarters...
Hurt.
If Pollard doesn't hurt... If Dak doesn't throw the interception on the sideline... early in the game, it's like the one right, and I think they go down and score a touchdown right
that
after
Gallup.
That. Yeah, I think he's throwing a Gallup. Yeah, and if that goes differently, Dallas played better than San Francisco for a large majority of that game.
They did,
and then they got just the bludgeoning in 23, which led to so much change here for the Cowboys that I think it really is. We talked about this. They built a team basically. They were building their team at one point to match what San Francisco was doing. And so it is a little odd that now they've been involved in trades the last few years, like just openly, yeah. like kind of swapping players with each other. The fact that, I mean, what, how many, they've gotten three deals done for players in the last 3 years. D Winners, Osa, and then Trey Lance.
Oh God, I forgot about Lance.
And yeah. so, I mean, they've been willing to make deals with each other. So in that sense, it doesn't feel like, maybe at the executive level, there's not the same sort of intensity or animosity, but at a player level, there is. There's such an intense focus on that football team.
Do you think it's the same the other way?
Yeah, I think they have. I mean, Kittle wearing the F Dallas shirt, and I know it was a callback to something, but like, yeah, they did not like Dallas. Those players on that team.
Do you think the San Fran, do you think the rivalry is on the same level in terms of like, you know, say, if you were to list San Fran's top rivals? I think it's Seattle, right? Seattle's number one, or the Rams, either one.
Yeah, I mean, division rivals are always going to be, they're just more relevant. In fact, that's why I'm going to suggest something right now. And I've thought this before, and something along these lines. I think the NFL would do a great service for themselves if that floating 17th game every year was just the same rivalry team every year. So every year, San Francisco and Dallas are playing each other.
Huh.
Or if you wanted to, like, really feed into the history of Dallas-Pittsburgh. Dallas and Pittsburgh are scheduled to play each other every year. Because you've got the extra 17th game anyway. So Dallas and Pittsburgh are accounted for each other.
Would that not get inconsistent with an imbalance in the schedule? So you would have a team like Indianapolis playing Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, I guess that wouldn't work.
They're in the division.
Division, so it wouldn't matter.
Indy and New England.
Indy, New England.
Yeah.
And then you get a team that is like Cincinnati gets, you know, or Buffalo gets Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's not necessarily.
It can create an imbalance.
Creates an imbalance.
But league is cyclical. Rosters change. Who's good and who's not is going to change a lot over time.
But and like, is Indy and New England a rivalry anymore, or was it Brady and Manning? That was the reason for it.
So that was generally Brady and Manning. But that's the thing, is that even if that's not the one you want,
right?
Feed into it. Mm-hmm. Like Dallas, San Francisco is, that's really good for the NFL when they're going at it.
Really good.
If you schedule, because I like, for instance, I feel like 2024 with Dallas not being very good, and San Francisco wasn't great that year either, but both teams not being very good, and then having that game just kind of be a meh game, and then 25 they didn't even play each other. Going into 26, It's good. All right, we get the San Francisco game, but it does not have that game in 23 that they got whooped. That was there was buzz going into that game because it's, man, this is the last two playoff games. Mm-hmm. This is intense, like heat is starting to build. The NFL, I would think, with all the different ways that they like to like elevate the brand and do different things, I would be, again, it doesn't have to be San Francisco. Maybe it's, but you just find historic rivals that you go, all right, we really want to pair these teams up. And you know what? You could even be more creative with it. You've got, all right, well, what about the years they play the NFC West? Or what about the years that they finished in the same spot as the 49ers? So they're third and third, and they end up playing each other. Fine, you end up playing San Francisco twice like it's a divisional game.
I mean, look, it's I love the fact that the rivalry exists. I love the fact that Osa
feed it,
you know, is thinking about it that way.
It also speaks to what you always talk about, though, too, of just it can change instantly. Like, he hates the 49ers, and I was like, all right, well, now I'm just throwing a knife at this, a different picture.
But my question with that is that real yet? Like, can you even feel that way?
I'm sure he feels that way about Dallas because he feels like Dallas
screwed him over.
Just he took a deal and then he gets flipped instantly. Like, yeah. I'm sure that was just there is real frustration there with Dallas specifically.
In a general sense, a player probably doesn't feel that way necessarily this quickly. But since you're right, he did take the discount.
Then it's just a different kind of energy.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Wanted to try a little something, Cowboys best and worst for the day. We have a couple of different directions.
That sounds cool.
That we can go with this.
All right, let's do it.
Would you like to start with the best or the worst?
You know what, Kevin? There was a lot of regarding the Rangers.
That's fair.
You know, and it looks like we do have a bit of a storm cell working its way through here in DFW. So
what?
I think we should go with the best. Let's get some positivity injection
here. All right.
Here.
Pull up the Cowboys schedule.
All right.
And I want you to tell me.
Where do you go for the Cowboys schedule? What's your, like, which one do you like to look at the most?
I think I've been preconditioned to ESPN.
I'm right there with you. It's the layout of it that makes it easy for me to see everything
exactly.
Right there. The Cowboys, if you go to their website, it's like you got to scroll six times.
Yes.
And that's just too, I'm trying to get things in a compact
exactly.
little area.
Exactly.
Nice. Look at us. What about you, Alec?
It's Espen for me.
There you go.
Especially because they tell you what network it's on too.
Yes.
So you know if it's prime time or not.
Yeah, that helps.
That's a good point.
Smart job.
All right, I want y'all to look at this and tell me, what do you think is the best game or game you're most excited about on their schedule? I'll give you a minute to ponder that. But also, since you mentioned the weather, I know this is just how the weather works, but do you still ever think it's weird when you like look up into the sky and maybe over your head it's super cloudy or it's about to really pour down and you just turn your head like slightly to the right and you're like, but it's sunny right there. Like, what? I don't. They're so close.
Have you ever seen it rain with the sun out?
You know, yes. And that always
and no clouds?
Freaks me out. That,
Where is this coming from?
I don't believe I've ever seen it rain with no clouds. Well, I feel like that would terrify me.
I guess I'm lucky.
But also, I remember when I was driving once and I could see the line where the rain stopped. And I thought that was really neat.
That is kind of cool.
I was like, I could just drive up there. There's no more rain.
What about a double rainbow? We had one last week. On Friday, I believe.
Was that guy stoned when he was like, oh.
That guy was. No, seriously.
No, I know.
This weekend, we had one. We got an email about it. It was awesome.
I kind of read it, and I deleted it, and then I wanted to block every single Nimrod that texted the whole
chain.
Adrian
and Avery and Carter, they all ran outside to look at it, and I was like, I'm busy.
Neat.
I've seen rainbows before.
Yeah. They get their jump ropes and just start having a good old time.
Here, give me a prism. I'll make a double rainbow. all right, so. I am very excited. This is weird of me to be this excited about it, but because it is a neutral location, even though it's a home game, I'm very excited about playing Baltimore.
Okay.
In Rio de Janeiro, it's going to be... First off, it's in Brazil. Thank you, Vin Diesel. But it's going to be one of those, you're early in the season. I'm hoping the energy from another country also is like off the charts. And I think that's what the NFL hopes too, right? Is that that's what kind of comes off there. That game right there is probably the one I'm looking forward to the most so early in the season. The next one would probably be the Rams.
Okay.
At the Rams, because that's a late test of what your team is versus what I think is going to be another playoff contender.
All right. Alec, I'm going to kick it over to you as well. What is the best game, the game you're most excited about on the Cowboys schedule?
I would probably lean Seattle.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
It's kind of a low-hanging fruit, right? You get the reigning Super Bowl champion or big game champion, if you will. But it's on the road in an environment that is known for being ridiculous and known for being stupidly loud.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of excited to see how the offense manages, one, on the road in general, but two, in an environment like that where the 12s, the fans out there in Seattle, are just going to be raucous. And I bet they are probably going to have a winning record, and they're probably going to look like playoff contenders the Seattle Seahawks are going to. So I think it's going to be a good late part of the season test going into your bye week, too. So that's going to have a lot of emotional value for me, because if you can go into the bye week with a win on the road over the reigning champs, I'm probably going to be on these airwaves talking crazy.
So I love that. I am going to go with... I think the Seattle one makes a whole lot of sense. I'm going to go with Week 10, hosting against San Francisco.
Now, you wanted that to be the bye week.
I did, but then they were like, hey, let's give you the latest bye week in the season and the latest one you've had in 36 years. That's fine.
You think that they can beat the Niners in the middle of a terrible section of their schedule where they can beat those other opponents?
Exactly, and that's why I can't help but let my mind wander. Right, because you look at those last three games, those all feel like winnable games. Now, I'm not trying to strictly discount Jacksonville. Maybe they'll turn out to still be really, really good, and you'll be an underdog in that game following the Rams game. But then you host New York, and then on the road against Washington, those feel like certainly winnable games. Hosting Arizona is probably the worst team in the NFL. Feels winnable. At the Colts, same thing. Hosting Tennessee, they don't look like they're going to be that great either going into the Thanksgiving game. And then you have San Francisco, which feels in theory like the most difficult game. And if you can beat them, who you have frequently struggled against, then all of a sudden I'm looking at it and I'm like, man, do we got a full-blown like winning streak going in to that game
and
against
that's interesting.
Philadelphia?
Yeah.
Then knowing you get the mini bye going into Seattle.
But. Alec, what happened last year when we played three bad teams in a row?
Oh, yeah.
We got our hopes up, Corey.
Started believing we were better than we were. Now, did you mention, though, maybe you're good before that,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, we'll be significantly later in the season, because you'll already have played seven games by that point. And so if you're 3-4, let's say, and you win those four games, I'm like, whew, you're back above water. Maybe you can make the playoffs.
But you believe your team is
you're fine.
An average
team. Yeah, and you'd have to run through at least 2-1 on the gauntlet.
But if you're 5-2 and run into that section, and then you beat them.
Hey, I don't care what anybody says. We're 9-2.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
Whereas on the flip side, even if I'm 7-4, then I'm like, all right, then I need to go 2-1 against Philly, Seattle, and the Rams. Then I'll be like, okay,
yeah,
maybe we are really good.
Makes sense.
On the flip side, worst game on the schedule or game you're least looking forward to?
Oh, Arizona, week 8.
That is my answer as well, because of what y'all brought up. Arizona looks like they're going to be the drizzling S this year. They're underdogged in every single game that they have. But Arizona also gives us fits, whether we're good, bad, or indifferent. So I could see rolling into that game against winless Arizona and it being in the fourth quarter, and you're like, what the hell is happening?
All right, Kevin, since 2008, I'm going to go through 2008 at Arizona, lost in overtime 30-24. At Arizona in 2010, lost 27-26. At Arizona, 2011, lost in overtime, 19-13. At home, lost 28-17. All right, so now we're to 2017, Kevin. Since 2017, according to the football database, we have won 1 out of 5 matchups with Arizona. So that would put us, since 2008, winning 1 out of 9 matchups with Arizona.
Yeah. So and just, if they come in winless and that stuff's still staring you in the face, yeah. you're like, oh,
so that's
no.
that's where I'm just like, it doesn't matter where we're playing them. Arizona, for whatever reason, we are their Super Bowl.
Yeah.
We are the Cowboys are like, they're like, we will beat
even when we're
them.
There and it's still mostly a home game.
Yeah. So I just don't trust the Cowboys. That's why that game is the one I'm least looking forward to.
I am right there with you.
0-whatever at that point, because I don't know when their bye week is, but they could be 0-8, 0-7, and then I'll be like, nope, don't care.
Mr. Medford.
I mean, the obvious answer is Arizona, but I want to be different here. I'm actually going to go a week later, week 9 at Indianapolis, because what are you? Like, are you serious? Yeah. Are you a fringe playoff team? Are you an average team? Are you below average? I don't know what to think about the Indianapolis Colts, and I feel like I'm still going to have that same mentality going into that game. Like, they kind of exist, you know, like an uncommon opponent. Cool. You get to go to a stadium that you don't get to play in often. Cool. Other than Jonathan Taylor, there's not much intrigue there. They didn't change much this offseason. They traded away one of my favorite players that they had in Michael Pittman Jr. They had the Alec Pierce contract that maybe that's the conversation yeah. going into that game. Is maybe we're talking about, oh, they got a steal with that contract. Maybe we aren't talking about it at all because it's the Colts and they just kind of exist. I'm not looking forward to that game because I don't think there's anything really entertaining about that matchup.
Interesting. Now, let's change what we're discussing, but go back to the worst contracts in the NFC East. How many of those do you think would belong to the Cowboys? What do you think are the worst Cowboys contracts? This is via Jimmy Kemsky of the Philly Voice. Is it biased towards the Eagles?
The worst Cowboys contracts right now? What do you think they are, Alec? Who would you say kind of stick out to you?
I'm interested if there is a Philly bias here. Does Terrence Steele make the list?
He did not.
Ooh.
I would probably think, hey, there's Philly bias here. Dak. Everybody hates Dak.
Okay.
Probably a cornerback that was recently signed to a significant contract and has underperformed, and you had to draft more cornerbacks.
See, and that's where I think this list is a little bit off.
Okay.
Probably more than a little bit off, because the only Cowboys on there are Deron Bland at 10 and Dak Prescott at 1.
CeeDee Lamb's not in there. Is that a good contract for the Cowboys?
Yeah, okay. I think that's a good contract.
All right.
Or at least, at the very least, I think it's a neutral contract. Right? Deron Bland, yeah, that's an actively bad deal.
There are some haters out there, I believe they're haters, that would call CeeDee Lamb a number 2 receiver. But at this point, George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb did prove that they can play as number 1s without each other on the field. CeeDee Lamb had struggles this year, but he still produced numbers.
Yeah, look, if you think CeeDee Lamb is a number 2 receiver, I don't know what to tell you besides you are wrong. In 3 of the last 4 seasons, he's been an All-Pro. I know last year was a tougher season, but the 3 seasons before that, he was second-team All-Pro, a.k.a. one of the best 6 in the league twice, and first-team All-Pro, a.k.a. one of the best 3 in the league. So the 3 prior seasons, the worst he was a top 6 receiver. In what universe is that a number 2 wide receiver?
Mm-hmm.
In the 1939 NFL, when there might have only been 6 teams? I don't remember.
If you were looking at this last year, Kevin, coming into the season, George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb kept telling us, we're both number 1 receivers.
Sure.
Did they prove that?
I think they did, because George Pickens was
everybody scoffed
second
at that
team
idea.
All pro.
Everybody scoffed at the idea of it, but after when given new information, the scoffing needed to cease and desist.
Yeah, and then how did we respond? Maybe we'll give you a contract, maybe we won't. But yeah, so Deron Bland is 10 on this list. Dak Prescott is 1. I think the Dak Prescott contract, it's obviously a bad deal. And I know
there's nothing you can do about it.
Look, and you can take that in whatever context you want. The fact is, it's a bad deal because you far outpaced the market. And when everyone was like, well, the market always goes past in the next one, then you have multiple deals, including Josh Allen, that did not and were $5 million cheaper. So the Cowboys signed a bad deal. That is undisputable. Like, there's nothing that you can say to be like, well, actually, which is a great bit. But in this instance, it will not work. But the worst contract in the NFC East, I think that is a little silly. However, the positive part of it is those are the only two. So you've got Dak at one, and you have Deron Bland at 10, which is
not like the Stars where you're just like, we got a bunch of $12 million deals and we're out of money.
Which, by the way, yeah. I mean, I hope Jason Robertson's good with $12 million a year, because if he's not,
that's what guys get paid on that team, Kevin.
Yeah. I mean, I guess so. But so it's not necessarily an Eagles bias. I thought it was going to be when the only Eagle I saw at first was the kicker. And I was like, hold on.
What are we doing here?
But the Cowboys have two. The Eagles have two. The Commanders have three. And the Giants have three. So,
yeah.
You know, some would argue it's lazy and too well balanced based on how the hierarchy of this division actually goes. But Javon Kinlaw is second on that list, in case you really wanted to know. And so the Commanders also have three, and they also have four. So for the Commanders, it's tough because they have Owe at three and Payne at four. And so they're like, hey, if you play defensive line anywhere on the defensive line for the Commanders, I think you got paid disproportionately. That's what it felt like. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Lucius. It is time for Krusty's Corner with a special guest today, brought to you by Greystone Roofing. Go to greystone-roofing.com. King?
Hey, hey, kids! Your old pal Krusty's going to teach you five new words.
You're not wrong about that.
From Dallas, Texas, number 55, Brian Waters.
All right, thanks again to Greystone Roofing for sponsoring this. Brian will return on Thursday. Day Baseball on Wednesday brought us back on Thursday. And joining us now, his podcast partner, he has his own YouTube page. You can see him on Brian's Crown Global Media Daily. Vach Lombardi here with you on The Fan. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
What's happening, fellas? Just, you know, working, doing our thing. Appreciate y'all having me on.
Well, it's great to have you. Let's start big picture here, Vach, with how much of a jump you expect the Cowboys to make in 2026 based on this offseason?
I see, Gavin, that's a dangerous question, because if I get on this radio and say, oh, man, they're going to be Super Bowl contenders, they're going to call me a homer, they're going to say I'm being XYZ, so why would you even put me in this situation? That's exactly what I'm about to say. But, you know, if you just follow the breadcrumbs, right? Like, hey, man, this was the worst defense we've ever seen in our whole entire life. Not just the kind of worst defense I've seen in my short life, or the worst defense in the league that year. This was like a historically all-time top 10 worst defense ever. And they still found a way to win seven games. Now, if you just do a little bit of math, because we cover the Cowboys every single day, every single week. There was a time in week 14, 15, we were actually having this conversation. Hey, man, the Cowboys could get in the playoffs if this happened, this happened, this happened. And that was still with them going out there looking horrible on defense. Now, Christian Parker, all you got to do is be 29th, be 28th, my boy, 25th. And you know, that'll just be humongous change. You'll win two or three or maybe four more games. So, yeah, man, you know, it sounds homery to feel like the Cowboys can make a huge leap in wins if they, you know, shore up some things on defense and they go out there and be fantastic on offense like they were last year. It doesn't sound impossible, but this Cowboy land and, you know, doom and gloom is the norm.
You know, I guess what holds me up from what could be and the best case scenario is just how difficult it could be against the AFC South and the NFC West. And if those teams are as good as they were last year, I feel like the Cowboys could be a bit better and maybe not end up with any more wins because of how difficult their opponents are.
Well, it's a good thing that you play the Giants twice and you play the Washington Football Wizards twice. And, you know, Dak seems to have some good luck versus the Eagles, because, you know, how dare Dak, you know, play a good team well. So he does well against those guys. You know, you would say that you have a pretty good chance of beating the Titans or whatnot. The Cardinals get weird. Arizona gets a little weird. Yes. On paper, that should be a team that you should be, but there's no such thing as a guarantee. But I think what we all have to figure out is, you know, what are we most worried about? Are we worried about the balanced team, which is like, think about San Fran or think about the Ravens, right? Or are we, you know, we more fearful of the team that's elite on one side, but they are vulnerable on the other side, right? So the Houston Texans, for example, Some people are fearing the hell out of the Houston Texans, and I feel you. That's one of the best defense in the league. It might be the best defense in the league. But C.J. Stroud looked weird out there, you know what I'm saying? And we have to account for those things. Brock Purdy can look weird sometimes. You know, the Ravens had a weird season last year. So, yeah, on paper, it is a very difficult schedule. But if you made the improvements that we all think that, you know, that we Overshawn coming back healthy. Deron Bland should be healthier. Your linebacker situation just simply doesn't have Murray involved, right? Mm-hmm. You would assume that you can do decent versus those teams if, and I'm saying a bunch of ifs and buts, but this is, you know, preseason. So there has to be ifs and buts. If your Dallas Cowboys offense shows up and does their thing, yeah, you could beat some good teams. You beat good teams last year. You know, you never would have thought that you could drop 40 points on Green Bay. It's just that your defense gave up the same damn 40 points. So we just got to do that same game this year.
Great Vach Lombardi with us here in the G-Bag Nation, 105 through the fan. Vachi, I want to ask you about the offensive line, and I believe you and Skywalker Steele might have just talked about this as well. I encourage everybody to go check that out on YouTube. But the Tyler Smith conversation about guard to tackle that kind of got brought up with Joseph Hoyt talking with him at the Derby about it. What do you think about Guyton? What are your expectations for him and maybe the best case, worst case for this offensive line in 26?
So, Zach, when we go into draft world, right, you have to decide, are you floor guy or are you ceiling guy? You know, if you like the players that have a high floor that can come in and do things right now, then cool. Those are the guys that you like. But some people are ceiling guy. Some people like to, you know, shoot dice in the bathroom. Some people like to take chances and say, hey, man, I know this dude hadn't played football for a long time. He hasn't played tackle. But for 1 year, he was a tight end prior to this. But, man, I bet by year three, he'll be a pretty good tackle. Hey, man, you know, you can't be that guy and then be impatient in year one and year two. This is Tyler Guyton's third year. Now, I'm floor guy. I'm more of the Booker dude. I want the dude that's good as hell right now, and then he'll go lift some weights and get bigger and be good next year. That's more my kind of guy. So I don't think that this Guyton thing should be an emergency right now. This is right on track. This is exactly who Tyler Guyton is, you know, supposed to be. Now, if you look at Tyler Guyton in 2024 versus 2025, he was on the right track to improvement. He was going up, and we were in camp. Y'all was at camp. What's up? Y'all was at camp. Y'all was there. And Guyton was doing his thing until Guyton got hurt. And him getting hurt set him back a whole bunch. Him not having to go against Micah at camp, that set him back a whole bunch. So he needs reps. He needs as many reps as he possibly can get. And he did make some improvements. But, hey, man, you have a couple setbacks. You're totally different dude. Now, what I don't think the Cowboys want to do, I don't think they want to move the interior too much. I think they want to be super elite in there with BB and Big Tyler and Booker, because it's three Tylers, pardon me. So they want those guys to move A gap. They want those guys to move B gap. When they play the Eagles, they'll let Dak worry about Nolan Smith, Jonathan Grenard, the outside pressure, all that stuff. But you want to keep Carter in check. You want to keep Davis in check. So that's where your guards and your center are important. And Tyler Smith, Big Tyler, he is an elite guard. He played a fantastic guard season last year. And he was hurt. He'll be healthy this year. And what I think you don't want to do is to take a dude that's elite, that's all pro, and put him at tackle and just make him cool. You already got a cool dude at tackle. If you look around the league, there are worse tackles than Tyler Guyton. We just live in Tyron Smith world. We live in that old classic Cowboy offensive line world. Guyton's not horrific. He just ain't as good as we want Guyton to be. But I wouldn't want to move somebody elite just to make him okay and just to take a cool dude and put him somewhere else to be another cool dude. Stay great. Stay fantastic. And if it gets bad, then draft a tackle next year.
Vach, how do you expect the offense to get better next season?
Hey, man, keep on breathing and existing. One thing that I keep mentioning that's really difficult for an offense is when you're constantly in this shootout mode, right? So, like I said, the Cowboys defense, they were 49th worst last year. That's horrible. And as an offense, it's hard to get a rhythm. As an offensive line, it's hard to, you know, change up some of your attacks because you're always pass setting. You never get an opportunity to hit first. So what happens is when the Cowboys are running the football and they get to be physical and they're a much better run blocking unit, then they get to play action. They get to do all kinds of weird stuff. They get to mix up the defense. But when you are only passing the football because J.J. McCarthy whooped your ass, because Russell Wilson whooped your ass, I don't know if I can say ass twice or three times on the radio. I know I got one good one.
Unlimited.
But when you're constantly in shootout mode, when you're constantly in track meet mode, you're taking away half your offense because you're having to throw the football. So what ends up happening last year is, okay, well, if we get up to a point, to where Bo Nix is throwing the ball all over the yard, then what we get to do is we get the bracket pickings and we get to shift one dude over here to take Lamb away and make Flournoy beat us. And we know they're not going to run the football because they're down two scores, right? So if you're the Cowboys offense, you live in this world where you get to run the football when you want and you get to throw when you want and you get to play action when you want, I would imagine that you get a little bit better. How many times did we just watch the Cowboys last year, second half of a game, you have to be perfect, and they just don't run the ball because they just can't run the ball because they're down. And Javonte Williams still had, what, 1,200 rushing yards last year? I think the run game will be better. As far as the passing game goes, I just want them to be efficient. Dak Prescott doesn't have to lead the league in passing and touchdowns or anything like that. I would actually love it if Dak could have a game like Jalen Hurts or Brock Purdy where he only gets to throw the ball 12 times, gets 120-something passing yards, and you just run the ball and play defense. That would be a luxury to have something like that. But Dak don't know nothing about that, because if Dak, you know, plays bad, then the whole Cowboys play bad.
Vach Lombardi here with you on The Fan. Okay, give me the best under-the-radar move of this offseason. I got three options. You got Durant, you got Abonya, you got Devin Moore, one of the fourth-round picks, or other. Vach, who would you go with?
Man, Devin Moore, you know, in my personal opinion, might be a next-year guy. It could be Otito. It could be Otito because he's just an extra rundown guy. I think what the Cowboys really wanted to do is they wanted to raise their floor and make it hard for an offense to do anything to him. Once upon a time, the Cowboys had this defense where they can roll out the bed and get a whole bunch of sacks, or they'll go get turnovers and picks and all that. But versus a good team, they can run the ball for 250 yards against you, and none of that matters. What I think the Cowboys did this year is that they're kind of sacrificing some of that stuff. They had a whole bunch of three techs that are like decent pass rush guys, or just D tackles that are decent pass rushy upfield attacking type guys. Perrion was a guy like that, Solomon Thomas, and of course Osa was a guy like that, and they would ask Quinnen and Kenny to do it, right? I think now what they're leaning towards is like, hey man, let's just get big edges on the outside, let's get big dudes on the inside. Linebackers gotten a little bit bigger, you got corners that can tackle, and we're gonna play this scheme where you got this safety playing nickel, so he helps in the run game. I think what the Cowboys want to do is they just want to stay steady on defense. I think you may not get as many big plays on defense, but you're not going to get as many big plays happening to you. And that might be just what this Cowboys offense needs, just to be true. So Otito, Ogbonya, hey, man, there's going to be a bunch of down linemen there. You're going to need three of them. And when you play nickel, you're going to need another dude that can move around and play different spots. Otito can play zero, one, four. I wouldn't do it a whole bunch, but he can. Three tech. And he's a dude that's really good versus the run. So if Christian Parker wants to be this chess player, this calculus defense to where he's mixing up the looks, and that's going to be what your pass rush is, just making your quarterback hold the ball longer, then you just need dudes to deal with the run, and Otito can do that.
He is at Vach Lombardi on Twitter, on YouTube. You see him on Crown Global Media with Brian Broaddus every day, buddy. Anything else we can tell the folks how to get to you?
Hey man, Vach Lombardi, somebody in the comments right now probably don't like me or whatever. I saw a couple people in there. But hey man, Vach Lombardi everywhere. You can find me. I'm Googleable. Appreciate y'all, and I'll be tapping into 105.3 The Fan.
Hey, Fantex loved you, bro. We're going to have to do this more often.
Thanks, Vach.
Cheers, buddy.
Well, thank you. Salute. Appreciate y'all.
See you in Oxnard, sir. Or sooner on Zoom. Thanks to Vach.
The rising coaching star on the offensive side of the ball for the Dallas Cowboys, friend of the show at the Combine in Indianapolis, Clayton Adams, says it's the little things with George Pickens. I was kind of going through the Instagram reels of y'all's show yesterday without me, and I was like, oh God, why are y'all talking about George Pickens' availability and compensation? Why is this coming up again? Because this is not going to be popular on social media.
Because it's the topic with the National Insider still. They're in.
Who said what?
Tom Pelissero and James Palmer both talked about Pickens on the same day. Pelissero talked specifically about, he had said that when he was asked by that Cowboys fan producer of Rich Eisen's, he was like, hey, you know, just tell me Pickens is going to be here in 2026. He's like, I can't. He's like, I assume he is. He's like, but and as of now, he would be. But things can always change. He's like, Dallas would trade him if they could get the right compensation. They're just, nobody's willing to give it to him, basically, is what he said. He's
and
like,
James?
And James was saying that he thinks there's essentially
no chance
that he signs an extension here. Not because he doesn't want to, but just they're not going to get something done. And so
what's amazing about that, if true, Jerry Jones is like the definition of you can change and we can put up with some mess for the amazing production. Yeah. But now we're taking this hard line stance. If it's the case, I'm still hoping and thinking if George Pickens goes out, balls out, and is a Boy Scout, he can sign here long term. It's just amazing they're drawing this ethical teammate locker room line with George Pickens after all the crap that's happened around here for decades.
Well, has Brian Schottenheimer been running it for decades? No. And he's got his standards. Okay. You got to meet his culture standards. Okay. And it was funny. We talked to Clayton Adams.
Do you seriously think that is a major factor?
I think part of it, yeah. I think a big part of it.
But Brian's the one who is fawning over George every time in front of the mic. He just loves football. He loves football so much.
Oh, yeah. No, I think he...
Right there.
I think he believes all those things. I think that's why it's like, yeah, can we just get you to do this little bit of extra? Can we get your Clayton Adams the same way? Clayton Adams told us how much he loved him. But when we were in Indy, Ed, you had said, you know, we're always trying to figure out George Pickens. Before you could even finish the question, Clayton Adams said, me too. And it's like, okay, that sounded almost exhausted. And again, I hate the, if you are one of the people out there on social media who will later quote tweet this segment and go, they're out here stirring it up again, blah, blah. This is the discussion out there. I'm sorry that we're like taking part. You can put your head in the sand, cover yours, do everything you want, like you did with Micah, and be an uninformed jackass for 5 months leading up to it like you were, and then go, what? He got traded? Or you can deal with it now. We prefer to deal with the things now that are actual topics of discussion. What we do know is he gauged his trade market as recently as like a month ago. I think that's fairly significant. And we know the Cowboys just have not been willing to give him a long-term extension at this point. All this is important and relevant. And Clayton Adams was talking to, it was Judy Batista and Ian Rappaport at a league function where he's part of the accelerator program that kind of elevates assistants and gets them in front of general managers and allows people a chance to kind of be have the spotlight on them a little bit and you know, boost candidates who the NFL thinks are really strong. So he got a chance to do that. And in the process, they had asked him a couple different Cowboys questions. And I thought the split in the way he addressed two people was very interesting. And the first clip is going to be on George Pickens. And this is cut 23. How can a full offseason of George Pickens unlock even more?
Yeah, I think the familiarity with what we're doing, you know, can improve and the detail of what we're doing can always improve. But the biggest thing that I've learned from having two elite playmakers on the outside is the effect that you can draw to all the other parts of your offense. I think we're just scratching the surface there of, you know, what opportunities does it give you in the run game and what opportunities does it give you on first and second down to really blend and marry what you're doing. Those are all things that we're very, very excited to get into.
That is, first off, definitely a running game kind of guy. Mm. They go, well, what can Pickens really do for you? Like, help us run the ball more. That'd be awesome. But it's a very little thing. But when he goes, yeah, understanding what we do more can always improve, and then going, the details can always improve. Those are two areas where it's like, okay, maybe that's coach speak. Maybe that's just the way he talks about everybody. Like, yeah, you know, we really drill down on the details. We want to do better. Okay, well, the very next question was, what can Dak still unlock then?
I think that, you know, there's probably been a lot of years where, you know, that people would say what he's done has been good enough. I mean, I think that the ultimate goal for him is he's got to play really high level football every single week. He's done that a lot throughout his career. We got to make up, you know, for the other areas that maybe have failed him in the past. And so I don't think it's about Dak trying to be Superman. I think it's about Dak being the best version of himself and us finding ways to make the rest of the offense and the rest of the team better.
So the split on those two players was essentially, what can Dak get better at? Dak can get better at just accepting us helping and doing our part better because it's us who fail him. And then on George, it's, well, details and understanding what we do, which is code for he's got to stop freelancing.
I'm going to need a new sounder at some point in time, Peyton, for a Bobby
Tism. I knew you were coming with this.
The Bobby Tism, a Bobby blatant overreaction as I went and listened to Clayton Adams in the commercial breaks of the Western Conference Finals game. And I was like, this is the inner workings of Bobby's brain and the wires are crossing to make something out of absolutely
nothing. It is nothing. I'm going to start keeping track of all the times that you guys are saying my wires are getting crossed and it's been right.
I give you credit and I give you props when you end up being right. This is just over. It's over analyzing.
Why haven't they paid Pickens? Has everybody not looked at it though and gone like, there's something missing. There's something they're behaving differently than what matching.
I don't know if it's in my opinion, and you know more than me about this.
I cannot stress that enough.
To me, it's you got to be a great teammate for another year.
Yeah, this whole thing about had him in the building long enough, I do believe that is true with them.
That would be my concern and my worry. Look, man, this guy had the third most yard. Clayton Adams is saying that was year one. Year two, becoming even more familiar. Jerry said something the other day. I don't know if y'all covered it yesterday, where he's like, Jory Epstein saved it from the owners' meetings, and he's like, we expect more from Pickens early.
Yeah, and he said, he listed some things. He goes, this is a great opportunity for him to answer all those questions, which is, again, I think you have to, especially with them.
I just have a hard time with the guy had the year that he did, the production that he did, and then let's pick him apart.
Salty.
To me, if I hear, like, I want to see more effort with route running. Like, a lot of great players, a lot of people freelance.
Yeah, like, if he's going to freelance and have that kind of year, then I want him to freelance.
No. We were standing there in training camp a couple years ago, and when Princeton Fant ran a 13-yard out, and Dak went, get back here, and he goes, that's 12. He goes, get back here, run it again. That's a 12-yard route.
That's, okay, now.
That's the precision they're talking about.
There's a timing, I understand that. Part of what makes George great is these elite athletic catches, not necessarily always in timing. Yeah, you got to have the timing. You got to have your numbers that good because Dak's throwing to a spot. I get it. But part of what makes George great is just that there's a unique ability to improvise.
What I would like you to compare it to, Bobby, when I think freelancing, I immediately I go to Diggs.
Or Micah.
or Micah.
Yeah, where he's I'm going to do whatever I want.
How would we compare what you think Clayton could be referring to here to those?
I think he's talking about complete route precision, like a little sloppy with the steps. Yeah. And I think at times
it's not like I'm going to go run this different route. I
think it's more just when he says an understanding of what we do, it's more again about he needs to be more detailed and understand like the details in terms of how that impacts the broader concepts we're trying to execute. So when he says more familiar with what we do and the details can always be better, it's like, okay, well, he's got to understand that the reason why these steps matter is because the broader concepts we're trying to execute. And he's saying the same thing with both descriptions, but in general, he needs to tighten it up. It's not as precise as it needs to be.
And isn't that understandable after one year?
Yeah. I don't think precision.
I don't think it should be a character assassination.
No, I don't think precision. I think precision in your route running, I think that essentially what's being said there is like, are you always doing things to the fullest effort with your route running?
Right.
And that is an indictment, and they would view that as a football character indictment of like, Detroit, I don't need you running the route a yard short because you're I don't want to get mixed up in the press here.
I mean, to me, the top three Pickens problems last year were the Lions game, the CD incident, and being late to meetings. That's what we know of.
Those
are the three things, and it's like, before I give you $35, $38 million and we commit all this to two wideouts and a quarterback, I need to make sure, because we have been burned by extensions and big deals. And the Cowboys, I give them credit. I didn't think they would win out on this. They guessed that the rest of the market would not be clamoring for him as much as you and I thought that the market would, and they ended up winning this franchise tag battle when I thought it was a definite L. I thought it was a locked-in loss that Mulligetta and Pickens would have their way and force their way out of here, and we get Micah 2.0. The Cowboys, for now, they won this. They won this move.
They won from the trade standpoint. I still think on the open market.
No, they won from the franchise tag standpoint,
right, but like
too.
I think if George was an unrestricted free agent,
yeah,
someone's given him $35-40 million.
I would guess that too.
Now, when you factor in the trade situation, the compensation that you got to give up.
Somebody would give him $40 million, but would not give him. $35 even. But they wouldn't give 27 and draft capital.
27.
Yeah, like the fact that he's signed to the franchise tag now, somebody could offer a first and a third and get him, and they're not taking
it. It doesn't have to be two firsts, right?
No.
Yeah, no, it doesn't have to be.
Now that he's signed, I mean, if somebody called and said a first,
year, you're going to have to decide. To give him 40, maybe.
Right, which means you're not comfortable doing it right now. The league is not comfortable paying him $35-40 right now.
With a first and a third.
Right now you're paying less than that, though.
I'm just saying he's
and so it's a decision in the future. It's like trading for somebody on a cheaper deal, and they don't even want to do that.
Unrestricted, do you agree with us that someone would have given him 35 per?
Unrestricted, no compensation going the other way.
I think he probably would have had to settle under CD, probably like 32, 33.
Okay.
Something like that.
All right. Because, I mean, if you're looking at it from the type of guy you want, are we not kind of going backwards to the right RKG type people?
Why is it backwards?
The right kind of guy? Well, because we said we're done with the RKG.
If you think of RKG as Boy Scout, sure. Yeah. They don't think of it as boys. They think of it as football character.
Professional.
Like Ezekiel Elliott was not a Boy Scout off the field. They viewed Ezekiel Elliott as the right kind of guy as football character. Okay. And so they want guys who are like, yeah, we want hard practicers. We want guys who are big culture builders. Like, all right, if he gets into some trouble off the field, as long as when he's at work, he is a culture builder, then that's the right kind of guy. So he did have one more clip here, Clayton Adams. This was him talking about areas where the offense as a whole can improve.
Well, I think, you know, one of the biggest things is we want to take care of the football better than we did a year ago. We want to protect the quarterback better than we did a year ago. We want to be better in the red zone than we were a year ago. And so a lot of those things were not just things that we needed to answer going into the offseason. It's like, how do you dig into this? And what is the root of some of these issues? And then how do we solve those problems? And I feel really good about the process that we've gone through in the offseason with our staff of really attacking those problems, and rather than just saying, hey, we're going to get better at this, like, how are we going to get better at that?
Boom, 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 1, 2, 3, those things he listed out, that's exactly the three things we talked about the other day, of just like, could the offense still max out? And it was all that. Red zone's got to be better, they've got to be better, you know, with their pass protection, and they probably need to be better in terms of turning the ball over, because they were one of the teams that turned the ball over at a slightly higher rate.